Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Connecting the Dots with Casey Tuckness. It is now April the 21st, 2017. And tonight we have a very exciting show. We're going to be talking about the courtroom, injustice in the courtroom. And tonight we've got special guest Doug Boggs. I had Doug Boggs on probably about 6 to 8 weeks ago, and we talked about his books. He's the author of several books, just the injusticeness. And this week I had quite an experience. I went to the federal courthouse in Houston, Texas, and met an amazing lady, and her name is Yolanda. And we met just in the county recorder's office, and I overheard her saying that she was going after Wells Fargo. And I looked at her and I said, ma'am, we need to meet. And I got her telephone number. We connected. We connected that evening and then the next day, and I actually went to one of her hearings. And we're going to talk to Yolanda at the end of the show and talk about her experience and what she has, you know, overcame and dealt with the courts. And so, but right now we've got Doug Boggs, and Doug Boggs is the author of The Unlawful Detainer, which strongly talks about court hearings and just the unlawfulness of them. So on the line next is Doug Boggs. Hang on.
Hello. I have I'm releasing a book coming out soon called The Unlawful Detainer. And for those of you who are in 36 states in the United States that deal with the deed of trust, it pertains to your situation. And there's actually legislation in all other states to attempt to bring this forward for them to also become deed of trust states as well. One of the things that I uncovered in my process was the fact that the trustee held no power to protect your deed of trust, and the bank owned the trustee, basically. The trustee would work for the banks. When I presented this to the court, it was quite interesting that day. And after I got to a point in my oratory, and the judge said, Mr. Boggs, I totally understand. I get what you're trying to say. I understand where you're going with this. And so it was myself against Wells Fargo Bank. And the courtroom was rather filled with people for a variety of reasons, some of which were my case. But at the same token, the judge said, I need to step back and I need to reflect on this in chambers. So we'll get back to you on this. And shortly after, my paperwork was silenced and taken out of public view, and et cetera, et cetera. So the court system is an interesting place to try to create justice in the system that we believe in. But we also need to understand that it is a corrupted system. If the judge fully understood where I was going and what was going on in the case, why didn't we just discuss that then and there? By him making a decision to silence the paperwork in private, people need to find out about that information. People need to really dig deep and look up that information rather than litigating it and letting the truth stand as it may. So the injustice, the unlawfulness of the unlawful detainer, or the injustice of our justice system, is something that we need to really understand that it exists, and you're fighting against that while you are trying to expose the truth in our society today.
So thank you, Doug, for all the information. I'm currently going through as well as Yolanda and Mr. Parker, there's so many of us that are going through all of this today, and it's just like, you know, who do we turn to? Who do the courts? And so yesterday I spent half the day in the courtroom. And so I went down to the federal courthouse in Houston, Texas, And I witnessed, you know, a lot of cases, and these cases all had one common denominator. And the common denominator with all these cases is they were all fighting for their home. So with that being said, I don't know if Dave from Austin, Texas is live. Stephanie, I know you're running the board tonight. If there's a 512 that is active, that will be Dave. Or it could be Steve Skidmore. But with that being said, it's like we, the court, and what I witnessed yesterday, it's like there was Barrett Daffin, there was an attorney that just so happened to be there representing Wells Fargo. He wasn't representing this actual case, but he was actually representing Wells Fargo. It was Barrett Daffin. Barrett Daffin Frepper. So Barrett Daffin, we have going into the Supreme Court. So we've got a case against Barrett Daffin. So this attorney was with Barrett Daffin, and he was trying to take away an 80-year-old lady's house who did a reverse mortgage, who was four payments ahead. I mean, how does that happen? How does that happen? Like, a lady does a reverse mortgage, she feels like she's doing the right thing, and yet she's fighting for her home at 80 years old. I don't get it. So, Doug, tell me how you feel about this.
When cases that come across the news or the pipeline that we are able to see, it's interesting to step back and ask that question. If you're looking at something that seems not right, you need to look at it deeper, because it's not right. And the more that we look into those cases, and the more that we broaden our understanding that what we feel is the way things work, actually, it doesn't work that way. And the more you are able to comprehend that, you can find the answers to the situation of what you're struggling with. We need to step back and look at the damage that's being done and not repaired, and finding the root causes of issues. There's a lot of issues that come up. Everyone's story is different. Now, there's a root cause to every issue. There's obviously deeper roots, but we need to understand that there are a lot of ways to skin a cat. And knowing that and understanding that, and the legal mumbo jumbo that people bill at $300 to $500 an hour, most of it is rhetoric. It's a matter of looking at things in a realistic way, so you're able to argue it, because there are arguments that are provable. There are arguments that are unbelievably astronomically out of this world, that, wow, this is really happening. Huh, Casey?
Yeah.
But you have to know that it happens and accept what's happening so you can get through this maze of chaos, because it does exist on many, many levels.
Thank you, Doug. So I would like to bring on, so we've got Yolanda on the line, correct? Yolanda, are you there?
I'm here.
So we've got Yolanda, I'd like to introduce you. So Yolanda, I met you at the county recorder's office this week, and you are a former Houston Police Department, like HPD, 15-year veteran that has worked investigative, and they are coming after you. And you've sued Bank of America, you're in the process of Wells Fargo, and many, many more. So can you give our listeners your story?
Hi, everybody. I am so glad to have met Ms. Casey and Mr. Boggs and everyone on the line. Yes, I have experienced all of the injustice, and I have been really trying to expose it for years now. Well, I have exposed it. So I am the subject of retaliation and different things like that. But I wanted to ask Mr. Boggs before. Oh, let me clarify also that I'm a former civil Harris County deputy. So I was a little bit familiar with the civil what the civil system, the property code, and just the process of your civil service and the courtroom. I actually used to be a bailiff in the courtroom, and so when I encountered some of the things that were happening that actually support and hide this injustice, I felt that I had to expose it. And I did for as much as I could without having, without having anybody really to go to for support. So in any case, Mr. Box, what state are you in again?
I'm in California.
Is that where your encounter with Wells Fargo happened?
Correct, yes.
So, okay, and go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
And the trustee, when you were saying about the deed, the trustee, was it a U.S. trustee or an administrative, like Chapter 13, 11, whatever, trustee?
No, it was a U.S. trustee. It was actually Barrett Daffin were part of the staff. And so that was interesting to hear that just now. And what I found that was this law organization is what the trusteeship is. And what I found, come to find that they are one of the largest legal institutions that act as a trustee for the major finance corporations. Various
wow.
names under different states, but Barrett Daffin is high on the totem.
Barrett Daffin is actually the one that rescinded my fraudulent foreclosure 6 months after the statute of limitations had run out. And I asked him, I said, okay, so let me have, I want to see the certified letter that states that I actually received this. So they sent me the tracking number. Well, the tracking number backtracked to a man that died in 1990.
Wow.
And I mean, who would like research that? But you know what? I knew I wasn't in the wrong. And so I knew that I didn't have this letter. And I'm like, if I don't have it, who has it, right? So if it was actually sent and if it was actually received by somebody, then who signed for it? And
yeah.
You know, wouldn't you know that it was somebody that died in 1990, the year I graduated high school. So when I explained this to the judge in my township that has actually had this in his courtroom, he was just like, okay, I've heard enough. I've seen enough. I've heard enough. This has got to stop. And it does. This has got to stop. And it's got to take, a village to make this happen. They've got to hear our stories. And Yolanda, when I was at the courthouse yesterday till 6:45, listening to your journey and to your story, and hearing everybody else's, it's like every single common denominator that was there in that courthouse that day were fighting for their homes. Am I right or wrong?
Yes. Yes. And that was what I was going to say, that I have a story to tell. One that is that everybody needs to know. I wanted to touch a little bit on the Wells Fargo and let Mr. Boggs know that because I was a civil deputy, I knew the different entities. And each and every time there is civil laws passed, and there are many people that are just not very familiar with the civil statutes. So, therefore, in any case, let me go. Wells Fargo, what I found, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, all of these different entities in Texas, I spoke out in 2009 before Commissioner's Court because I was getting all of these directives in the mail because I was speaking out against them. that were from improper authority, just as Casey just said, from people, former employees, different things like that, telling me that they couldn't. Yeah. I'm sorry, can you hear me?
Yeah, or dead, I said.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at least they were former, you know, were no, they were not employees, so that you couldn't hold anybody accountable. And also you would, you know, you would be redirected, you know, thinking your concerns or your complaint was not going to be addressed or, you know, what have you. So to go a little bit further, in Texas, they created, I mean, you know, when they created this, the leases, license, partnership, and corporations and all of that, they were able to, and I'm sure they had this in mind when they did it, and I'm going to find my speech because I sent them running in a whirlwind. Every time I speak, I'm really not, well, when I don't like speaking before, like the commissioners' courts and things like that, but I always produce the evidence to prove, you know, what I'm speaking about. So in any case, I found that that the insiders would find out that, just like if you sign up to speak before a commissioner's court or city council or anybody like that, you get all of these calls from people claiming to be of authority, and they want to interview you, and they want to find out what you're going to speak about and different things like that, so that they intercept your concerns and you know, do these, send these letters and that. But in any case, the leases, license, partnership, and corporations right now for Wells Fargo, for Bank of America, I have found that the Bank of America that is on my deed, okay, not my deed, they have really deeded my property to themselves, and Wells Fargo, I have found that they are not really the Wells Fargo and the Bank of America that we know, that are depository institutions and that were a part of the subprime mortgage crisis and the big bank failures and things like that. And the way you can, the way I found out is I called like the Secretary of State, and I tried to see if they had any leases, license, corporations or partnerships that had registered, you know, as corporations under these names, because in the civil law, of course, they can use similar or common names. So a lot of times I'll find like Wells Fargo is Wells Fargo N.A. without the, you know, it's not a really a national association. It's just N.A. And they don't have a system of like verification, verifying the authority. So the Bank of America that's on my paperwork happens to be a company by the name of Columbia Management. And when I look up their, what is it, the IRS number, the their IRS number, it comes back to a totally different company. So for you guys, you need to know that they are, I mean, there are many, many of these corporations that are registered, or they use similar or like names, and it's not really the, you know, the right individuals, so, or the right corporations. So in my case, I found that the tax numbers that they're using on your, you should see it on your tax transcript or something like that for the interest and things like that that they take out.
Yeah.
It doesn't come back to that company. Now, when I looked up Bank of America, our Secretary of State has Bank of America, like five different Bank of America corporations registered with them as different, and they won't tell you what type of corporation. Well, they will. They said fiduciary, and another one said, they said they just didn't know what the other one was, but also the name has changed. And so in any case, it's not Bank of America, the depository bank.
No.
And so, because if it was, then they would not be registered with the Secretary of State. You know, they wouldn't have to register with the Secretary of State. So I found that they are using this, under the leases, license corporations, the partnerships and things like that, they're using that. And these criminal enterprises are registering these names and doing, because they're insiders and they know, you know, what banks or what's happening with the securities, the mortgage asset-backed securities,
What's interesting is everybody knows that takes place. Everyone has seen the movie Inside Job. Everyone has seen the movie The Big Short. And read some of the numerous books that are going around. Everyone gets it. But yet at the same token, the next day they wake up, they write a check for their mortgage to a bank that has absolutely no right to collect that mortgage whatsoever because they've sold that right within the first 30 days to securitize the note as a mortgage-backed security, to put it on Wall Street. In that process, they sold that note. So they no longer own that note.
Right?
Yet they bill you every month to pay a monthly mortgage payment, and that's a federal offense. If you've ever watched the movie The Firm, you would understand that the banks, every month, with every person that's ever borrowed to borrow money to buy a house, the banks are fraudulently taking that money because they don't have the right to do so, and there's a lot of ways to prove that they don't have the right to do so. The fact that they send you a bill notice in the mail is mail fraud. Every month, they are doing mail fraud for that bill that they send to everyone in the United States.
Wait a minute,
now,
you got a tip.
That's 10 years and $1 million or something like that for 1 month, for one offense. They do that 12 months a year, 30-year mortgage for everyone in the United States. That's how large this is.
Well, I am one, Mr. Barr, that I don't do a lot of TV. I don't do a lot of social media, and I probably should because I've got, you know, a lot. So you said Inside Jobs. What was the name? You said the movie was Inside Job, and what else?
The movie Inside Job was a documentary in 2010, I believe, that got the Oscar. It's a beautiful film, and it talks about the Wall Street corruption. And what's interesting is people understand, yes, the Wall Street has existed. We've seen, and we know the collapse that's happened. We understand how it took place. And this movie actually it convinces us that our fears are true, that the system is corrupt. So that's what that movie is about. But the people leave that film. It's a great film. It really spells out the information of the entire global collapse at that point. But the people will still wake up in the next morning to write a check for their mortgage to a bank that doesn't have the et cetera, et cetera. Then the movie The Big Short comes out, which is another Oscar-winning film. And it talks about a similar breakup of Wall Street, but people have a hard time grasping the reality that Wall Street is something that you watch on film, but the destruction of Main Street, your mortgage, your payment every month, is what's actually real. And the fact that that they've sold you into the concept that you now pay your mortgage when you shouldn't. Because if you read between the lines, you'll understand that you shouldn't be paying your mortgage. I'm not advising people to stop paying their mortgage.
Yeah, right. Well, we pay it because we see the horror of 80-year-old women being threatened with losing their homes for reverse mortgages and different things like that. I was going to ask if you guys had ever read the suit, John Corman versus Aurora Loan Services.
No.
I haven't either. I haven't heard about it. Tell us about it.
That tells every detail from top to bottom. And basically, you know, we know, you know, that our government is a business and there is a conflict of interest. And it's deeper. I haven't seen these movies before. I'm not a big TV and movie person or social media, but what I do know is that the notes, all of the notes, the closing and all of this stuff, where they stamp your note, pay to the order with these robo-signers and different things like that, that is a transaction, a sale. That is a sale that they're making off of your collateral. So that makes you vested. And if you guys read John Corman versus Aurora Loan Services, it's 225 pages, and I bet you it will be the most interesting and informative lawsuit you have ever read. And it talks from start to bottom, and this is my total experience with this mortgage loan that I got back in 2007. So I have experienced, I have experienced all of it. The notary signature is not really a real notary. And that
Correct.
Tells me that you knew from the start that you were intentionally, or your intent was to do that was wrong, because you didn't want to be held accountable by, you know, really using a certified or a licensed notary. And also that they were able to sell these notes and securitize them and then, okay, have them be paid off in bankruptcy. And then come back, because they know in 10 years the federal government or the Federal Trade Commission, I think they're supposed to destroy these records, the bankruptcy records, after 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so now they are really coming down hard, you know, on the people, and that's why so many people are under threat of foreclosure and even more so now, because they have went back to the warehouse and got all of these dead notes. They've been collecting on them now under these fake LLCs and LLs, whatever, leases, license, partnerships and things for years. And
right.
Now, you know, they're not afraid anymore. They're bolder now because they know that paperwork or documents is supposed to be destroyed.
You know, it's interesting that you brought that up, because I got an email from a friend of mine just last night, I believe it was, and she was talking about how she received a letter where she's being foreclosed on in the state of Iowa. She received a letter that stated that the courts were going to be destroying her documents. Because the time has elapsed for them to be storable.
Wow.
And so it comes with what you're saying. Basically, the courts, for all intents and purposes, become complicit and just destroy the process so it can start all over again. If people were listening to the news today, they would find that housing is up 6.8% in the last year. And it's at the highest, so the 6.8% growth nationwide, and it's at the highest it's been in 10 years.
Hmm.
Now, if we all remember what happened 10 years ago, and the way the fact that the dollar is unstable and going south, I mean, I'm not painting a dark picture. This is reality. But with that, this is the newest information to where all signs point to what happened the last time we were here.
Mm-hmm.
And the economic situation globally is not in a very beneficial state for us to be able to sustain ourselves through that. It might be very dark. These are real numbers in the most current for March, and we are at the point of August 2008 or shortly before. It's actually quite serious. And the thing that bothers me the most is that nothing has changed. We haven't, through Bush and Obama, and now we are at Trump, nothing has changed. anything that is going to fix this situation whatsoever. There's actually been more deregulation, and it's not a good scenario. So I don't want to paint a dark picture, but I do kind of really look at all what's on the table, and that's hard. That's a hard place. I mean, from my experience, after going through what I've experienced, I look at that as a very troubling place for us all to be in, because the people that are running that those kinds of numbers at the top, the elite level of our society, that 1%, have done this before, and they've learned some lessons, and that's what troubles me. But I try to be optimistic with all that. I try to be optimistic, but it's difficult.
Well, this is, and I have experienced it through several administrations also. Not because I've been dealing with this since about 2008, but I've actually been exposing the injustice since about 2005. What I was going to add to what you said was, remember when I said that the government is a business, so there's a conflict of interest.
Exactly.
You know, when the bank failed and the Bush administration was my administration, that they needed to bail these banks out and do these types, all of these, you know, different types of things. And they knew full well, okay, both the Bush administration, the big banks, Wall Street, President Obama, they knew, you know, full well that these banks were going to do the very same thing that they had been doing. And,
yeah, and
so, you know,
did.
I'm not go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, but what people need, with that said, people need to look back and see the patterns that are being created and recognize that these patterns are real. They're created. There's a lot of thought that goes into this, and they learn every step of the way as the laws change. And the benefit to that is that the laws can change. The reason anything of this happens to us as the people that simply want to have a house and a picket fence and a dog, all of this exists against those types of people is the powers that be are trying to control. So when you understand, start to see how they're doing that. And there's a lot of ways they do that. You have to shut the way that you know you can down. But there's a lot of ways that they're skinning this cat.
Mm-hmm. Well, the biggest loophole that I could see that really enables these corporations to do that, of course, everybody wants to go to work and just get their paycheck, their big paycheck, and, you know, not be concerned with what's really happening, or even they don't have a sense of reality when it comes to what's happening to
the
common individual. So what I'm finding is there is absolutely no system of verification of authority in Texas. And so therefore the corporations, and they are pro corporation because they are a business, which is you know, discriminatory, and it does nothing. It's actually at the demise of the economy. And so I think that the first thing we need to try and petition or get some type of system of verification of authority, because otherwise they are going to continue to create these the kind of, not fake, I don't want to say fake, the corporations and things with names and different people and not have to be held accountable. So they sent a contract attorney. And in my case, so far, they not one individual in the corporation has had to verify their identity or their authority.
Correct. And so we're talking about jurisdiction as well, the jurisdiction over the court. But you're exactly right. What I witnessed yesterday was, I could not believe it. It's like I left there and just felt like, how could this be the United States of America? That judge, like, clearly, he even had to look at his own code book to see what he qualified for. Like, he's like, okay, and this, and L. And he would open up a book and, like, see exactly what it was. It's like, you don't even know? Like, you've been on that bench for 12 years? I mean, like, how is this right, you know? There are some judges that are, like, that just recently retired that are actually stepping up to the plate. And I look forward to the press releases getting answered this next week on this, you know, that to be continued. And you will see that there are some judges that are like, you know what, we are fed up with this. This is ridiculous. Uh-huh. These banks have gone way too far. And it's time that we step as a nation and we do something on this.
My thing is, you saw it yesterday.
With the Barrett Daffin, the 80-year-old lady that took out the reverse mortgage, she's four payments ahead.
Mm-hmm. It was Barrett Daffin,
Frappier, Turner, and Engel.
Turner and Engel. Yes. That's 19, though.
Really?
Yeah, so anyway, I think that we have Dave on the line. Dave, Stephanie, you're working the desk. Could you bring in Dave? He's 512, area code 512.
He's live.
Dave, are you there? Dave?
You got a Steve here.
Hey, Steve, we'll take you for sure. We've got Steve and 512. So, Steve, tell us what you're thinking tonight. You're coming from Austin, Texas, or New Braunfels area?
Area-ish.
Area-ish.
Right. I've been listening from the beginning of this show, and I've been dying to pipe in.
Tell us what you're thinking.
Okay, Barrett Daffin, Frappier, Turner, and Engel. I've been in court with these guys for 7 years.
Yeah. What a friendly club we are.
my issues actually began with. What was the bank?
Where do you begin, right, Steve?
National City Mortgage Company, who then changed their name to National City Mortgage Incorporated, who then was absorbed into some other outfit. It's been a couple of years, and I haven't really.
Yeah.
I tried to put this in the past, but. At any rate, it came down to appearances in court for 7-odd years and facing Barrett Daffin attorneys. Now, there's one, and one in particular. I really don't want to mention names with this allegation, but it brings to mind the question: what would a bank do without an attorney? How do you go after the attorney? Well, the attorney that was on our case told we prevailed in this case, actually. The company that he chose, the attorney that his opposing counsel chose to place as plaintiff, had gone out of business and filed their papers of dissolution with the Ohio Secretary of State. We had copies of that.
Dissolution papers?
Excuse me?
The dissolution papers?
Correct.
Really?
Correct.
That's amazing. That's awesome.
Now, this outfit has several outlets several branches.
So yes, you do.
The attorney on this case said, well, Your Honor, that's the Ohio branch. plaintiff here is the Florida branch. Well, the judge went to his computer, typed it in. No, sir. Says they're dead, too. Well, Your Honor, I'd like an opportunity to brief this out. And I whispered in my attorney's ear, I said, move to dismiss. Your Honor, we move to dismiss. Yeah, I think that's a good thing. So, now, what did he do? On the streets, you and I would say, well, he lied. He lied through his teeth.
Mm-hmm. Well, he brought it to court.
Correct.
Keep in, there's an important issue here. It is legally impossible for an attorney to lie.
Yes.
Right?
It is, however, completely possible for him to perjure himself or commit aggravated perjury.
Yeah. That's the difference between whether they say something. That's the difference between whether they say something that they can say, "Oh, that's to the best of my knowledge because of what the client told me to, of the information given me by my client," or if they lie, then they crossed the line with information that they knew they shouldn't have said the way they said.
Produce your client.
Yes, exactly.
Produce your client.
Yeah.
Your client died 2 years ago.
Right?
Yes, exactly.
And to say it was the Florida branch, you and I would call a lie. However, looking into the Texas Penal Code, Title 8, Chapter 37, in 37.03, aggravated perjury.
Yes.
A person commits an offense if he commits perjury as defined in Section 3702, and the false statement, 1, is made during or in connection with an official proceeding, and 2, is material. B, an offense under this section is a felony of the third degree.
The third degree. Out of all of the participants that were in that banking association, who went to prison for the third degree theft?
Nobody.
I tried pushing the issue, and I went on a carousel ride from Hades.
Yes, you did.
A hot potato.
Yes, he was.
I went to the judge in front of whom he committed these offenses, and I said, "Judge, I'd like to ask you a question. You've got a few different hats that you can wear." And he looked at me kind of funny, and I said, "You've got a judge's hat, you've got a magistrate's hat, you've got..." "Oh, yeah, those hats. Yes, sir, I'm going to ask you to put your magistrate's hat on and accept this complaint, this affidavit, against one attorney whom, if I'm not mistaken, and if you'll read this, and if you'll recall, committed aggravated perjury before you." He said, "I cannot magistrate this, sir, if I was a witness to it." Okay.
Wow.
Good point. Thank you, Your Honor. Sorry for wasting your time. I went out and I thought, okay, let me call APD, Austin Police Department. Called APD and said, "Hey, I've got evidence of a third degree felony against an attorney, and I need to know who to hand my affidavit to." "Well, we don't do that." "Really? You're the police department. You go after felons, right?"
"Right."
"Yeah, but we don't do that." I said, "Well, who would you suggest I ask to do this?" "Well, you might try the bar if he's an attorney." "Okay, thank you." Called the bar. They said, "Well, you can file a grievance, but we don't go after him for felonies."
"Right."
I said, "Well, who would?" "So the FBI."
"And
called the FBI. The FBI said, "That's a local police issue."
"Right." "Exactly."
So I went to the sheriff's department.
the proper authority is the sheriff's department, but they're not going to do it either.
Thank you. You're right, Yolanda.
And it, yes.
But they did point me towards some weird office that I can't recall the name of it, but it seemed to be a bunch of gatekeepers.
Yeah. Yeah, I think
bunch
it's probably
that scene in The Matrix.
and it's nobody. You don't know who you're talking to behind door number one. I think that is the not the ethics. That is golly, I just lost my focus, but I know exactly where they pointed you to, but you were at the right authority. The sheriff's department is the right authority, but usually what they do to common people, because they all work together, and is that when what they do is they will turn the complaint around and start to retaliate against you. They are not going to the bar, nor the,
The guys with badges are the hinge pins. The guys in suits.
Yeah.
Steve, do you remember the video of me showing you where the sheriff did not have a badge that came into my house?
Wow.
Well,
he should have fitted right on out. He didn't have
it's been a while.
I definitely did. And again, those of you that tuned in after Yolanda came on, Yolanda's the one that has the judgment against Bank of America. She's also the one that has been, you know, on the Houston Police Department as on the investigative side for 15 years. We've got Steve Skidmore, who is my dear friend out of Austin, Texas. We've got Doug Boggs, who's an author out of San Francisco. We are all dealing with the exact same issue.
All the same people.
Actually, yeah, all the same people.
And
welcome to the
club. It's like whether it's a full house or a royal flush, there's like slight changes of character, but it's still a powerful hand to play.
Well,
I'd like
to address Yolanda again. You
Please
say
do.
They brought in a you say they brought in a contract attorney. Am I mistaken?
That's correct.
Wonderful. Then let's go to the contract. What is the contract? The contract is the entire body of the mortgage, the HOA stuff, the all of it.
Uh-huh.
Now, there's only one that's put into public record. That's the deed of trust. Let's go to the deed of trust. That is an integral part of the contract, a note being another integral part, but let's leave that alone for right now. The deed of trust, that's what lays out the terms of the contract or covenants. So look for a covenant. If you've got a standard mortgage, look around covenant 16. What you're looking for is a covenant titled Governing Law and Severability.
Wow.
Let's stick with governing law. Most will say, and I will quote, "This security instrument shall be governed by federal law and the laws of the jurisdiction in which the property is located." There's your state law. Okay. Now, let's go back to the body of the mortgage and have somebody who can possibly appear as an expert witness look at your HUD 1 and see if you can find any Truth in Lending Act violations, Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act violations, Homeowner Equity Protection Act violations. Go to the county recorder's office and see whose name has recorded a transfer of an interest in this contract.
Mm-hmm.
When you find nothing, don't be surprised.
Right.
But, okay, so you've got violations of TILA and RESPA. Okay, let's go to TILA and RESPA. You've got a 3-year statute of limitations on the statutory remedy of rescission.
May I interrupt you for one moment? As I said before, there's many ways to skin a cat.
Absolutely.
And all of the things that you are presenting are the myriad of options that lawyers have developed in which to argue a case and bill by the hour. it does nothing to the root cause of the problem. Because when you get to the root cause of the problem, if you can show that the contract is actually null and void and is fraudulent on its face and therefore is it's a bogus piece of paper,
yes.
blank.
Yes.
If you can show that, then everything else that you've been talking about is moot.
Agreed.
And that's what I tried. I wanted to try to find something that got all the dust out of the way, and let's have a clean slate to play with. I don't want particles. I want the root problem of the cause of what's happening and why is it happening. So, if what you're talking about is a deed of trust contract,
I'm talking about a simple breach of contract.
Well, as a breach of contract, if they're going to issue you a deed of trust contract when they know that the independent party that the trustee is supposed to be is actually not independent, actually by law, it's not independent.
Right.
And if they show, if they know that information, and the banks know this information, in the state of California, I will say, but there's 36 deed of trust states. You can figure it out. It's the same story. It always starts in California. If they can show that, if you can show that they know that they own the trustee, that the trustee is not independent, whether they own him or not isn't the issue. If you can show that the banks know that the trustee is not independent, they can't even tell you that it is, because by law it's not. If you can show this, which is what I did, then you've reached the point where the contract has absolutely no validity. So every TILA argument, every RICO argument, every RESPA argument, every argument you make after that is null. It's
absolutely
moot.
Absolutely.
And so that's when you get to the root cause of all of the issues.
Not necessarily moot. Not necessarily
moot. Not moot. Well, if the contract doesn't exist, it's moot. Anything
I
after
completely,
that.
I completely agree with everything you're saying.
Okay.
But when it comes down to the courts, breach of contract is a very simple thing. Now, an essential element of breach of contract is that there is a valid contract to begin with. So now they're saying they've got one. Now they're put into a position where they must prove it's valid, and they can't.
Mm-hmm. Well,
yes. No, they can't. So they will argue because they can't prove what you're saying is correct and that they are actually using poop paper. If they can't show valid and legitimate documents that legally define everything that you're orchestrating, which we know we're on the same page. It's difficult for everyone else to understand unless you really dig deep. But let's say the paper is blank and there's some names on it, and they're trying to make it legitimate paper, but you're proven that they can't. They don't ever argue their way out of that because they can't. And so they will come back and they will fight you on procedural issues. And 90% of every court case loses on procedural issues. So if you know that and you fight only the law and you do not make a procedural issue, you have a 90% chance of winning your court case.
Well, let me give you guys a little bit of details on my home equity loan and the foreclosure, because both have interesting details. I went through the rescission, the breach of contract, all of this. When I took this loan out in 2007, sometime like January of 2007, I went to a lending tree. At this time, it was Home 123, which was a subsidiary of New Century Mortgage. I was under the impression that, I had excellent credit, and I was under the impression that I was getting a loan through New Century Mortgage. Unbeknownst to me, I didn't know that they were in trouble because they were, I guess, one of the major lenders at the time. So I go and I get this loan, and I'm under the impression it's for New Century Mortgage. Lo and behold, the closing takes place in this lending tree's office, and I go through signing all these documents and doing all of these things like that, And at the end, I have to request the copies. You know, are you going to give me copies? And sure enough, he said yes, and I waited like forever. Like, it didn't take that long to make copies. You know, I don't know, an hour and a half, 2 hours, it don't take that long to make copies. So I get this envelope, okay, which is supposed to be my title document. I paid for all of the closing costs. I even had my own appraiser, Mr. Barry Duncan, who did the appraisal, of course, so that we could come back with the 80-20 for, I think, a 98 loan. Okay, so I get my title documents, and I run off, and I've got a loan. The guy told me in the office, he said, well, his name was Bob Mascott. He said, Robert Mascott. He said that, he said, Ms. Broussard, Ms. Frank, you're going to, your money will be in the bank in 4 to 6 weeks. And I was like, okay, because I owned the property free and clear at the time. And I was just getting a home equity loan to pay off some taxes, actually. I said consolidate some bills, but I was paying off some taxes. And what else was I doing? Oh, and doing some repairs to the house. So I run off with these documents, and I'm okay. I think, and he told me he was going to have, he had to post-date the whatever, so the date that I was in there, he post-dated the documents that I was signing. So in any case, I run off, and I've got my title documents and everything, and it seemed like trouble for about the first year. Everything went fine. And after that, I mean, everything went wrong. And because I knew a little bit, I knew that these things were, like a violation. So I started requesting. Well, I looked at the loan documents first off in my package, and what I had was a bunch of trash. I had a bunch of the documents that was scratched out or was supposed to be, they were stamped by the title company, Fidelity National Title. They were stamped by them with an endorsement that says, we can't process, these documents can't be processed. That's what stamped on my documents. So
Doug had them as well.
Yeah, so I then started, requesting from the service because the service has started to change. I still don't know that New Century and Countrywide and all of these people are going under and they're being sanctioned by the Federal Trade Commission and the Federal Housing Authority. And
they've all been bailed out by us, the taxpayers.
Yeah, so Bank of America end up, they send these notices of transfer, and basically what they say is it's been sold, transferred, or something else, and it didn't tell you, didn't specify which one it is. And so I would request, like, did you buy it? You know where the servicer, your note holder, they say, has not changed. So in any case, I went through all of this and got to a point where they would tell me or they would put it in writing, and I keep everything. I have the very first advertisement that I got in the mail to go to Home 123. So I was just exhausted with trying to get or obtain my loan documents, and I'm telling them that, all the terms and agreements has been changed. You guys breached the contract, and they would say, we don't have anything to do with your previous servicer did. You don't have a right. You don't have a right to a third party. If you're a third party and you don't have a right to pooling and servicing agreements or the central index key number for the Securities Exchange Commission, different things like that, because I was learning all of these things that they failed to disclose this stuff and that it was some trust, although I've learned now that the trust was closed many years before they sold it.
about 2 years after the product, your mortgage, is sold into a mortgage-backed security, that trust generally dissolves after about a two-year process. And then that'll get repackaged into the collateralized debt obligations, et cetera, et cetera. But those, none of those entities exist. So that's when the dominoes fell in 2008. And nothing has changed. And that's where we are today with the news nothing has changed. We still need to fight because we're learning more about what exists, and we are actually gaining time in order to try to create change, but nothing has changed. So we still need to fight. We still need to be out in the trench doing this. We know more now. Everyone, Yolanda, everybody is well versed, and I think it's a matter of continuing the education and the fight for everyone, because there's a lot of angles that we can win on, and judges are coming forward to step forward and say, you know, this needs to stop.
Definitely have judges coming together, which is awesome. Press release is out on Monday. And Stephanie's very aware of that. So is Judge Alan B. Sadler. He's amazing out of Montgomery County. And we want to thank our sponsors tonight. Our sponsors are Cinco Peso Securities and Investigations. And Yolanda, thank you for joining us tonight. Again, it's Connecting the Dots with Casey Tuckness. And we will see you next Friday night. We'll hear from you next Friday night. Good night.
Awesome.
Good night.
Good night.